Hi there, you're welcome to the Vulnerability Podcast with PCTV. On here, we explore everything that makes us unapologetically human, because everyone has a story or two. Hey guys, you're welcome to the Vulnerability Podcast with PCTV. On here, we explore everything that makes us unapologetically human. This is season two, and the theme, as you know already, is everyone has a story or two. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about starting over, what it means to feel like you have your life all figured out, and then, you know, series of events happen and you feel like you have to literally start from scratch and literally rebuild. And in this episode, I'm not going to be alone. As you know already, I have my friend here, Debola. Hi, Debola.
Hi.
Are you ready for this?
I don't think he is.
Okay, so the major reason why I wanted to have this episode is because I have learned personally that life is not a, it's not a very straight line, right? You know, when you're starting off, you have like your dreams, you have an idea of where you want to go to, and then you feel like you have it all figured out sometimes, and then life just happens to you, and you just hear bass, 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 and next thing you know, it's a totally different trajectory. But it doesn't mean that you can't come out of it. It doesn't mean that even when it gets tough, like you feel like it's, you're literally at the worst, that it can get better. One of the most pivotal quote I have seen in my life, it says that sometimes the best place to rebuild is from the bottom, right? And so I want to have this conversation with someone who has rebuilt from that bottom after sort of like having it all figured out. So Debola, let's start with you just telling us your story as much as you can. Tell us, drink as much water as you can.
So yeah, I pretty much thought I had it all figured out pretty early in my life. And by early, I mean from my days in the University of Lagos, where I did my first degree, and I attended. So pretty much, my story in a nutshell goes like this. So I remember that my beginning in the University of Lagos was very chaotic. Chaotic in the sense that my dad at that time was insistent that I study a particular course. If I remember well, economics education, and I didn't want that. I wanted to do economics. And I think what made it particularly important to me was my economics admission with UNILAG was via diploma. And the interesting thing that had happened to me was the night before my diploma exam, entrance exam, I had this accident and I almost died, you know. It was a massive accident. I was rushed to the hospital. My neck was sprained in a cast, you know, and it was the night before. I think it was about 10 p.m. that night, but I still went for the exam from the hospital the next day. I didn't have my bath. I didn't have brushed my teeth. I had just pencils. I didn't even have a calculator. When I got to UNILAG for the exam, they had already started and they were already taking all the files away from the, you know, exam location to the department. And then, but I just happened to meet them as they were carrying it away. And then for whatever reason, they had mercy on me and allowed me to search. So I had to search for my file. And you can imagine the number of people who come for diploma entrance exams, you know. But luckily for me, I found it after not too long and I joined the exam. And without a calculator, with this cast, just in the middle of this traumatic experience, not having a calculator and doing core science subjects and doing a lot of eeny, meeny, miny, moes, you know, shading my answers, I still got merits from that exam. So it was extra special to me. You know, like what? I was still able to get this merit admission despite this traumatic experience. Yeah. You know, so I was like, nah, this is what I want. And then also because I had seen one of my brothers who followed my dad's insistence on what course my dad wanted him to study, elect, and then he went and did what my dad wanted him to do, and long story short, that didn't turn out well. He eventually, you know, dropped out of school. So I was like, nah, I wasn't going in that same direction. And then my dad, you know, kicked back and was like, you know, he was not going to pay my school fees if I wasn't, not that he didn't have the money, he did. But for him, it was a matter of, if you don't do what I say, you're not getting my money, as per a lot of what we experience in the Nigerian culture, you know. So I cried and cried and cried, and I was adamant, I wasn't going to. And my mom, because my parents are separated, since what, maybe 1991 or 1992. So my mom paid for me at that time. So I said this to lay a foundation as to the trauma that began my educational journey in University of Lagos. And in the midst of all this, you know, my parents being separated, there was a lot of trauma on the home front as well, you know, that had already been there. You know, and I feel as most of us do in the Nigerian culture, church became my exits. It became what I ran into on campus. It became like it was everything. You know, it became my life, you know. And running into church at that time, unknown to me, was going to spiral into an entire thing that I wasn't prepared for, you know. And getting involved in church, you know, and being very committed with it. And, you know, I was gifted at doing this thing. And that gifting just, long story short, created an entire fellowship of people. And I found myself pastoring. True story.
There was a particular point.
I'm telling you, I say I found myself pastoring because, so what happened was, I and like three of my friends will meet at the chapel to pray. Right? And then people just started joining us. No flyer, no advertisements, no name. There was nothing formal about what we're doing. It was just a group of young people who were in different places in their lives. I was traumatized and I just needed something to hold on to. I don't know what their story was, but whatever it was just four of us come together to do this. And then people will stop and join us. Like, why are you joining us? And they'll be like, I just like how you guys are praying. You're so passionate. Some would say, something just told me to join, you know? And that's how four became 10, and 10 became 20, and 20 became 30, right? And then at a point, one day, somebody says, you know what, let's give ourselves a name. I say, a name. I say, okay, what name? And then somebody just suggests a name, and that's how we got a name that we used to be called on campus. You know, so this, so at a point, I told him, I said, nobody should come back here next week because I'm not going to be here. Are you kidding me? I didn't plan to start a church. You know, and I'm like, no, I'm gone. Thank you. Bye. You know, and then I felt at that time that God wanted me to go back to continue it, you know, so I did. And this is how a whole fellowship was born. And I became a student pastor. And then by the time I got my final year and I was, you know, going to finish, and then that would have, and maybe if I'd finished at that time, things would have gone differently. But unfortunately for me, I had an extra, right? And then at that time, then there was now this 6 months or 1 year ASU strike. So 1 year extra became 2 years extra. And you know how it is when you have an extra year in school. You're not a student, but at the same time, you're not a student. You know, you're just hanging, you know, and you have all this time on your hands. So of course, I just gave all the time to church. What else? And, you know, kept doing that. But something tragic, and I mean, I used to be a deeply sacrificial person. Well, I still am to a degree, but I was bad at that time. You know, the principle of understanding how to put yourself first was not in my life, you know. So I was everything for everyone, going, I'm on the meager stipend I had at that time. You know, I would employ more people in church office than I should have. You know, basically, you know, I kept stretching and extending myself. And then at a certain point in a certain year, my apartment caught on fire at that time. So I lost everything that I owned. And in an instant, I had nothing. No clothes, no backup, no laptops, nothing. Just all I had on my body. And then from that time on, rather than take a pause and attend to my life, I still didn't. I started living from office to office. You know, I started living in a friend's office, sleeping on the floor. And I was in that space for like 3 years. Now, in that that's a long time. That was 2014 to 2016, 17. Yeah, you know. And I was in that phase. Now, I began to experience deep amounts of depression, dissatisfaction. I think the entire thing had begun to take a huge toll on me mentally, emotionally, psychologically. It had gone beyond what I had no plan. You know, it's a different thing when you're like, oh, you are going to start it. No, I literally found myself in the middle of this thing. You know, I had no plan. This isn't exactly what I wanted, you know. And then I began to find out that there were other things I wanted to do. So everything just started coming together and I started breaking down. Now, in the middle of those years, sex became how I started to deal with what I was going through. Or more, and as you passed, that was the last thing your hand you touch in this world as a pastor. You know, I became sexually active with people around me at that time. church members. Well, not members, but yeah, church folk, you know. And then there was somebody who I confided in. Long story short, the whole thing became a mess because that particular part of my life became public, you know. And my life literally, all hell literally split loose. It wasn't just broke loose, it was split loose, you know. And I lost everything. People left the church. You know how it goes now. I mean, it's just story. You know, people left. People were, you know, all the whole disappointment. Pastor,
and in the middle of it, you're still living from office to office.
And in the middle of that, I was still living in the office.
Right.
So it was everything. And this was all I had done. And this actually happened to me in 2017. Towards the end of 2017 was when this crash happened in my life, you know, and I lost everything. At that, I had no job. I had no NYSC, you know, I'd not done NYSC, I'd never done a 9-to-5. There was nothing. This church thing from 2010 to 2017 is all I had done full time. And then maybe I'll do one entrepreneurial training on the side, still for church people, you know, because I discovered that I was passionate about entrepreneurial stuff and all that. But this was everything. So when this information became public and, you know, the whole my matter became gist in town, you know, and people left me and the whole church crashed. I mean, the offerings, of course, the church is sustained by its tithes and offerings and givings. All of that crashed. The church was in debt, which became It became my debt, you know. So now I had no source of livelihood. I had no platform of expression. I had no residence because I was living in the office. Most of my friends deserted me because most of the friends I had were still these church people anyway, because I'm naturally very introverted. So I didn't have friends, you know. Most of the people were in here and I lost everything. I lost relationships. People who knew me, you know, friends that they will say that, but you guys don't talk often, who heard about it would just automatically stay away from me. You know, my life was, I mean, for the first 6 months of 2018, I was suicidal. I tried to kill myself. You know, I just couldn't see a way out. Everything was just darkness. Like, how was I going to start again? What was I going to do? Like, this was, this is something that happens to people in their 30s or in their 40s. This was happening to me at 25. This was happening to me at 25. I'm like, I was losing my mind, you know. So that was it. You know, that was the rock bottom. There was no church. There were no members. There was nothing.
There was no plan.
There was no platform. I had no NYSC, so I couldn't even just quickly get a job. I'd never done any 9-to-5. There was nothing to start with.
So no skills,
nothing to start with. It was, and there I was in that black space of emptiness, you know.
So what has changed since then? Since 2017 to 2017? What was the shift?
How changed.
Did the shift happen?
So I remember that in 2018 May, I just got up one day and I was like, you know what? What has happened has happened, and I'm just going to... It took 6 months to get to that point because the crash happened November, December 2017. So I didn't just get up. When I say just got one day, it's not really one day. It was 6 months of pain, of tears, of hopelessness, of despair, of trying, of nothing, you know. And just finally, I was able to pull myself. So that 2018 May, I took a loan from my mom and a loan from a friend of mine at that time, like a business partner at that time, and got an apartment, and that's how I started all over again, you know, in depth. And
so in that 6 months, you were still living...
I was still living in that office.
Right.
Can you imagine? How do you even begin to recover? I mean, this was the church office. So I was still living in that very same place where all of these traumatic experiences had happened. All of these memories were incubated. That space had almost become the sum total, like the reflection of my life, of nothing. So I was living in that same space of nothingness for 6 months more that I'd already lived in for 3 years. Interesting thing is, in those 3 years, it's not like I could not have afforded an apartment. But for me at that time, it was, you know what?
Give
church was everything.
Church.
I gave everything. Jesus. It was crazy. You know when I wear a shoe till there's hole inside. Before, I mean, they used to beg me, like, take a break. And I'd be like, no, guys, we need to make this a work of the Lord. We need to make this work.
So answer my question, what has changed?
What has changed is, I think one of the most powerful things that has changed for me is I learned the importance. I don't want to use the word balance, but I learned the importance of irrespective, regardless of whatever it is you're doing with your life, put yourself first. Nothing is sustainable. You are the foundation of everything, right? And if you can take the time to work on yourself, you know, and take the time to build that foundation, then you will have the capacity to carry everything else that you need to carry. So I think actually that is the one, and maybe that is amongst the many things, that is the one thing, one foundational thing that changed. I shut down, I walked away from everything, and I began the journey of putting myself first, you know, of working on my skill. I got a 9-to-5, and it was painful because this was something that I had never done and also vowed never to do in short. And I did that 9-to-5 for only 6 months. And in that 6 months, I fell sick every month because my body just could not understand what I was up to, you know, and all that. So I started again. And I think...
But in a different direction.
A different direction this time around. And I think...
And that, what was the key to finding that new direction?
So it wasn't really a new direction. It was sort of already like a side hustle. But more in the form of something I was passionate about, you know, training, you get. So that's what I just, you know, that's what I, so that 9-to-5 really what, and I would say that it really was the favor of God, because it was a client, it was somebody who had been a client just about 6 months before that. And that was my first client, you know, who just came and said, all right, I want to start this company. Your friend interested, come and write their business plans. And that was it. So I'd done the business plans, and then they were now going to set up the office and start the office fees. So I spoke to the guy and told him, like, look, I'm actually free. If you guys feel like, since I wrote the plans and they were going to start like 7 companies at the same time, was a billionaire. I'm like, I could come sit in full time, you know, to bring these plans that we have created to life, you know, and that basically became like a launch pad for me in terms of my
professional
career.
So how did you cope when you said, because you've mentioned that you were depressed, you were suicidal at some point. What were you holding on to sort of like keep you together?
At a point, I wasn't holding on to anything because I had nothing to hold on to.
Right.
There was nothing. I was in a state of nothing. I was in a state of, that's the only way I can describe it. I had nothing to hold on to. But I think eventually what I found to hold on to again was me. And I, in my story, that was something very powerful because I had never done that. I literally never ever put myself first for almost the last 10 years. It was all, ministry is something that it takes everything from you. It's not, if you're not careful, it constantly demands to take more than you have to give, you know? So, and I never said no. I was like, cause I didn't know how to say no. I put myself in a position where I would, because of how thick things were, I remember one time that there was a couple in our ministry who were having marital issues, and I told them to come and sleep over in my house so that we'll do marital counseling at 3 a.m. in the morning, because that was the only time I could find at that time, and it was so pressing for them. That's how crazy. So it wasn't just financially constantly working on zero, emotionally constantly working from zero, never used to take any breaks, didn't know what vacation was, didn't have friends. And my own at that time was core. We don't even need, we used to call it worldly music. We didn't even used to listen to worldly music, you know? And we used to go to the cinemas. We did nothing. So I was literally living like a monk indoors all the time, you know, on this whole church thing. So I think the most powerful thing for me was taking the pain to you know, have that 180 degree turn and saying, look, you know what? It's okay to put yourself first, right? It's okay to take the time to find the things you enjoy, to build your life, to enjoy it, to not be so stressed all the time, to be unavailable to people, and for that to be okay, right? And for them to go and look for other people that can be available to them, you know? So that was like that was the foundation. And then I just looked around me and leveraged on the first opportunity I got, right?
And kept building on it.
And I just kept building on it. And so one of the most important lessons that I always say I learned is humility, right? When you crash, right? you have to take responsibility, and being able to take responsibility really is learning to be humble. You don't crash and then you're still trying to maintain your sense of what you thought your life should be like, and you're trying to start from there. When you crash, you have crashed. You have to be willing to start at that level that you have crashed to. So, being a 95 was one of the, if you had ever listened to me for the 7 years before that, it's something that I'm sure I must have said once every month for 7 years. I will never do a 9-to-5. I'm sure if you go and find the tapes of my preaching at that time, you will hear me say it. I would never do a 9-to-5. I did a 9-to-5 because I needed to get an apartment to live in. And I had taken, I needed to eat and I had taken loans, and I needed to pay back those loans, and I needed to work, and I needed to start again. So I wasn't going to try to, you know, I'm a man of God. What do you mean? I'm anointed. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Because I'd had this, Youth Bible was a big ministry, you know. I had big ministers of God come to my church from Nigeria here and from abroad. Big conventions. You know, I could call big names. But let me not call your names. It's not like I'm trying. But you know, I was in this team. I was there. You know, imagine going to a church like Covenant Christian Center and you're in the VIP, at 23, 24, you're in the VIP section. It's not that you came as protocol. You are one. And the people there knew you. It's not that, yeah, they knew you, recognized the work that you had been doing, you know, and all that. And then from that height of never doing anything for myself, I can't remember the, at that time, I couldn't remember the last time I ever went to buy clothes, because there was somebody who came to me and said, God spoke to me. That's what he said. I didn't say it. Don't come for me. That I should handle your clothes. And from that day on, it will handle my laundry, it will handle buying my clothes, it will handle everything. Handle, you know, you I had
so you have to
doing,
literally let
what? Shit, man. It was an experience. I cannot lie to God. It was a mad experience, mad ass. Like, I had to, so it was a start over again. And it's interesting that for me, starting over again meant washing, included washing my clothes. So, but I learned humility. I learned that. So, and if you're ever going to rebuild your life after you've crashed, you must master and start with humility. If the requirement at that point is getting a job as a security guard, if it's what you have to do, you have to do. But you keep in mind that you will, if you're faithful in that, faithful in building yourself, you will go from that place and you can keep building. Right. You can get better, right? And in 2 years down the line, well, is it 2 years now? Because it's like, yeah, 2 years now by May, because it was May 2018 I really started again. 2 years down the line, I'm not doing so badly, right? I'm doing a lot better, I mean, in just 2 years.
So you're in a good place.
Very good place. I mean, a happy place. I'm in a fulfilled place. I like my life. I like what I'm doing now. I like what I'm about.
Do you still get depressed? Suicide?
Do I still get...
Are you over that?
No, I'm totally over that now. I really broke out of that July, August of 2019. And part of how I was able to do that was I just borrowed on people's lease on life. Like, I forced myself to start hanging out with friends, really. And their own, you know, because I was coming from a place of so much pressure and carrying the responsibility of so many people. But just hanging out with people who are just living normal lives and not carrying the responsibility of the whole world and living life from that. So I just drank of that stream, and then I allowed myself, because for a year I struggled with identity crisis. I mean, I didn't know who I was outside of this whole church ministry thing. I like, who are you guy? You know, I struggled, but eventually just constantly hanging around these people, and I call it borrowing their lease on life, you know, and just drinking from that stream. I caught on to it. And I was
began
finally,
to like find your
yes,
identity.
I began to become comfortable in who I am now and become satisfied and fulfilled and not seeing myself as less than who I was, because I'm no longer comparing myself. And that's another thing.
When so you're not crash, comparing this yourself yeah, with ex- self.
That's,
that you exactly.
And that's one of the, it's easier to not compare yourself with other people. It's much harder to not compare yourself with yourself.
That's great.
But, you know, I was eventually able to do that. I was eventually able to let go of who I was, who people said I was, you know, there are times where people will call me and be like, okay, so should we still call you pastor? And I'll be like, nah, you can call me my name. And it was weird for them to call me Debola, because prior to that it was Pastor Debola or PD. And I guess in our culture, it's almost like a sign of respect as well. You know, an elderly person, you're constantly trying to find sister, brother, uncle. You don't want to call them by their names, because our culture is very much against that, you know. But it was interesting to watch that people struggle with calling my name, and then to see that look of disbelief on their face when I tell them, oh, it's okay to call me my name. Especially people who were involved with the ministry when I was pastoring, you know, and all that.
Would you go back?
I say categorically that I personally am interested in going back to pastoring, because one of the things, look, I mean, of course I've learned a lot looking back, but one of the things that I learned looking back is it's not exactly suitable for my temperament as a person. I'm very introverted. I prefer to stay in my house. I'm not very out there. I don't like, I like to relate with crowds intermittently. So like, for example, I can have a group of people in my home and then they go and then I have my peace, but I cannot live with a group of people, which really is what you're doing when you're pastoring, you know. So my temperament is not really, I don't see my temperament suitable to the demands of that life, and actually struggled with that. This was part of the elements that led to the personal failure I experienced as a person, because I was constantly stretching myself to work outside of my personality, of my natural comfort zone, my habitat. It is good to do that periodically, you get, when you're trying to stretch yourself to new levels. You come out of your comfort zone, but you go back into it. But for me, it was I was living in the office, so there was no home, Jigga. There was no room for detachment. There was no room to separate myself from the work. I was the work was me. Do you understand? Because you're leaving, I mean, there was one night that one of the members of our ministry had become hoodwinked of about 500 or 700,000 naira. You know, the bada, basically. And of course, because they knew that pastor lives here, they came knocking on my door at 10 p.m. crying. You know, and I'm looking at, so what should I, you know, there's that constant pressure. You are pastor, manifest. Let the money come back now. are you looking, are you normal? You know, so there's that constant pressure to perform. There was no room for me. And I think one of the biggest mistakes I made, one of the biggest foundational mistakes I made was that I didn't create room to separate myself from the work. Living in the office was a bad decision, because every human being needs to rest. Even when you go to work, you should be able to go home. You know, detach yourself from the source of pressure. Usually, and the workplace, not just ministry work, even secular work, you know, there's a lot of pressure that comes with the environment and trying to hit targets, get results and all. You should be able to separate yourself from that, you know, but I never did that in all the years that I was pastoring, and it didn't turn out well. So
I had many questions when we started this, but I think that in seeing your story, you've answered most of my questions. And we've done like a lot of minutes already. So I would just ask you for your last word, especially to people who are feeling like my whole world is crashing or has just crashed or is about to crash, and I've felt like I had it all figured out. Like, now your story is saying you're not alone, right? There are other people who have gone through the same thing, who felt like, you know what, I have it all together, my life is good, and then it crumbles and like, who am I even, right? So they know they're not alone, but what extra thing can you say to them?
Well, if your life is crashing, I would say to you to let it crash. If you're fighting to hold on to it not crashing in whatever form, it could be you're holding on to people who want to go or who are no longer treating you the way they used to treat you as a result of what has happened, and you're holding on to those people or those forms of the way the relationship was. Look, you are prolonging your you know, there's this concept in medicine called euthanasia, where you mercy killing, where you it's medically certified to end somebody's suffering.
Yeah.
Maybe the person has been in a coma for a long time. You know, there are cases where, look, it is actually allowing the thing die is actually the expression of mercy. You know, so when you're in that place where, look, everything is crashing around you, look, let it crash, so that you can begin your journey to healing and rebuilding. if you're in that place where it's already crashed, I mean, I already said a lot that will help you. So, and I will say it again because it's the most important thing. Be humble. Be humble. Starting again requires humility. It's like, it's the major requirement, really. So number one, be humble. You need to start wherever your crash has crashed you into. Start again from there. It could be for you, you know, reaching out to apologize, if that's the reality, to certain relationships, and then leaving them to decide how, if they want to forgive you and when they want to forgive you or whatever, you know. But also looking within yourself, you know, it is your crashed phase will be prolonged when you are broke. So one of the things that you want to solve as quick as possible is resources, because that will help you heal. And that's just the honest truth. That will help you heal. Having the right friends around you will also help you heal. But I mean, you keep in mind the fact that if you put yourself in a position where you are just a burden and you don't have anything to offer to the people around you, it will get tired and then it backfires. You know, so that's why as soon as possible you want to deal with the resources, but also you want to. So there are just two things I would say. After you've crashed, you need to deal with resources and you need to deal with your emotions. Those are really the two sides of the equation, right? That I don't know what will work for you in dealing with your emotions. It could be therapy, it could be, you know, nature, it could be engaging things that, you know, help you feel fulfilled. It could be going to volunteer in some slum, whatever. But rebuild your emotions and rebuild your resources. That's really what you need to do, and take the time to do it. You can't rush it. Your healing will happen. And if people leave, let them leave. If people see you different, let them see you differently. When you rise again and when you succeed, people will come. You know, success has friends all the time. Thank you for having me. Peace.
Thank you so much, Debola. This is amazing. Wow. And I know that it was not the easiest thing for you to do.
It's actually the first time I'm publishing the story.
So thank you so much. It means a lot to me that you should.
And publicly, it's not even just on the podcast. Even the people here in the studio. I've been looking at them. I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm
So thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And the most one thing I know is that it will bless someone. Let me know if it's bliss. It would help someone. It would impact someone.
Thanks for listening to the Vulnerability Podcast. You can send us an email, vulnerabilitypodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram @the.vulnerabilitypodcast. Follow your host @peaceitimi on Twitter and Instagram. This episode was edited by Feifei and is available on all podcast listening platforms. Kindly rate, share, and review.